During my sophomore year of high school, I had a falling out with one of my friends. One day, she just stopped speaking to me. I didn't know why at first. Over time, I came to the realization that I had offended her with something I had said. And I knew the words that had offended her. I had, in fact, felt bad after I said them, but in my adolescence, I assumed that it was no big deal. As a teen, I had no clue about how to handle conflict. So I let the distance between the two of us grow, and due to both of our avoidance of the conflict between us, school days became increasingly difficult. Since we weren't speaking with one another, it meant that our friends were stuck in the middle. They didn't want to pick sides, so it left us all in an awkward dance for many months. And then, one day, just before winter break, I asked my mom for advice. And she recommended that maybe I should initiate a conversation with this friend. But I could not imagine doing such a thing. What would I say? What would she think after all of these months? And so my mom suggested, well, if speaking with her feels too hard, maybe you could write her a letter. And so I did that. I wrote her a long letter in which I apologized for my offensive comment and promised to be a better friend. And I also wrote about how our conflict was affecting our group of friends and could we please move on for everyone's sake. I gave her the letter at the end of school on the day right before winter break, and I asked her to please read it. When we returned from break, she didn't directly address things with me, but I was no longer getting the silent treatment. And we all moved on. Living in community with others is never easy. The early church seems to have experienced similar challenges in their interpersonal relationships that we do. In today's gospel text, Jesus advises the disciples that when someone sins against you, go directly to them and try to resolve it. If that doesn't work, bring a few witnesses with you. And if that doesn't work, then bring the matter before the whole church. This advice from Jesus has been considered by some churches to be a rubric for how to address all conflicts in church life. It's a step-by-step process, and if you follow it, everything will be great, right? If only it were that simple. In my experience, conflict rarely follows a simple pattern. It often is complex and multi-layered. Often conflict arises when two or more opposing perspectives are at odds, but none of them are necessarily bad. They're just different. Jesus' advice seems to assume that we know who is in the wrong and who is in the right. Jesus' advice assumes that all parties involved are willing to meet to discuss the issue. Jesus also seems to assume that the church as a whole will have a clear position about who is in the wrong, and who they will not have taken sides. Has Jesus spent much time in any churches that I know? I'm not sure. Conflict is often messy, and these simple instructions from Jesus can at times feel inadequate. But this advice does represent a good place to start. Jesus' advice here reminds me of various forms of best practices that we as humans attempt to follow, knowing that our human nature will cause us to regularly get it wrong. As I was pondering life in community this week, I got to thinking about church covenants and how these documents represent our attempt to create a rubric of how to live together. The church covenant is a statement of commitment, often printed or pasted into the cover of a hymnal at the local church. Historically, these statements were often read aloud by everyone present on Communion Sundays, a reminder of the promises we've made to one another about how we will live together. We have a church covenant. It's not in our hymnals, but it's hanging on the wall next to the Huron Street door. It's not been updated in several decades. Ours was written in 1987. The First Baptist Church of Ann Arbor Covenant says things like this. We agree to express the power of Christian love to each other. We will seek the will of God, depend on the grace of God, trust in God's promises, and yield ourselves anew to God each day. We will support our church. We will pray. We will show love and respect and support for others, even in disagreement. We will commit ourselves to work for peace and for the alleviation of poverty. And it concludes with these words. We recognize that we exist for the life of the world and have a servant ministry to this community, the university, and the world. Church covenants are aspirational documents. These are things we strive towards. They are who we hope to be. And we recognize that we don't always do it perfectly. We create church covenants knowing that we're human, and we tend not to get it right. And so we write down these things that we strive for. We attempt to order our lives by these aspirational documents. We make promises to one another and to God. And we recite promises when we dedicate our babies, when we welcome new members. And the reality is we don't always keep those promises that we make. Sometimes we fall short. Sometimes we don't live up to our ideals. And so we might wonder, why do we bother? Why do we write these words down? Why do we make promises that we can't keep? There was a pastor once who was struggling to navigate a conflict in her church. It was not a simple conflict like the one Jesus describes today. It was one of those conflicts where two people had differing perspective, but neither was clearly wrong. And so this pastor sought advice from their region minister, who asked them, well, what does the Constitution say? These documents, these promises, are important because when conflict arises, they are a good place to start. When my high school friend was offended by my words, she didn't come to me directly. She didn't follow that rubric from Jesus. But when I asked my mom for advice, a direct conversation is where she thought to start. And it made a difference. Our resolution didn't take the exact trajectory described by Jesus. But returning to a basic principle of working it out directly, it helped. We humans rarely deal with conflict perfectly. Sometimes our rubrics, our covenants, our promises fail us, but they're a good place to begin. In just over a month's time, we will have what is called a pastoral installation service during Sunday morning worship. An installation of a new pastor is a special worship service that is about many things. It's about celebrating a new season of ministry, marking it officially. It's about recognizing this ministry as a calling, that God has brought a particular leader to a particular place at a particular time. And it's about establishing the beginning of a covenant relationship between pastor and congregation. On October 11th, we will be joined by some of my family and friends, colleagues and mentors, and by some of our local religious leaders. And during worship, we will make promises to one another. We will covenant together for the coming season. And these promises will be a touchstone for us, a place to return. Inevitably, conflict will arise over the years ahead. And the vows we will make at the installation will be a reminder to us of the kind of community we strive to be. We won't always get it right, but we can always return to those promises. And as Jesus says, "Where two or three are gathered in my name, I am there among them." Amen.